second hour of We the People Radio. It is February 26, 2023, and my name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And Pape's got a lot going on. They're not just into turf and ag. They are also construction and forestry. They're into Kenworth. They're into Ditchwitch. They're into quite a bit of stuff. But our local ag and turf dealer is our sponsor here today. And anything you want that's green, give them a call. They can find it, whether it's a big tractor, small tractor, implements, parts and service. They do it all up there. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And if you can't get up there, give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226, or catch them on the web at pappymachinery.com.
And actually, they don't do everything that's green. Because we were chatting during the break about the green rush with the legalization of marijuana in the state of California and others. But here in Northern California, there we tie into the Laotian community. And so we were asking Dan about that because he said it's about – well, tell him about the win-win. Because that's, or wherever you'd like to start with that. But.
Well, you know, we were discussing the differences between systems, communism and socialism, and our free enterprise system that we have here, and our judicial system. And the question came up was, do they understand the law? You know, the kind of legal system that we have, and whether things are legal or not. And when you're in, and again, I love many of the Lao people. There have been phenomenal. Same thing with Chinese. Just treated me incredibly well. They're trapped within a system in their country that obviously if they were born into, they have no avenue out of. And those systems, especially socialism and communism, have created an environment where people have to cheat in order to get ahead. And it creates a situation to where if there's an opportunity for you to do something and you don't do it, somebody else will. So if you're in business and you have an opportunity to do something, we in America might look at it as being unethical, to where in other parts of the world, their ethics are different, their culture is different, their religions are different. You know, China, it's an atheist nation. 5% of it is Christian. As a Christian myself, you know, you go there and you can't go out and prophesize and that kind of thing. In Laos, it's not so. There's Buddhist and Hindu and different religions there, but when you're in a social society, you end up with a different view of ethics, and I think that's when sometimes we have people that come to America, and they bring with them that cultural background,
right?
And they have a different understanding of the way the laws work, the way that our legal system and ethical system is done. So I think that's one of the things we discussed is how do people view opportunities here when they come from that kind of environment.
Right.
There's a couple things that I've noticed, recognized myself, is that sometimes the ethical framework needs to be educated to new people that come into our system, into America. There can be abuse because they just don't they don't conform. Many times they understand better than we do the systems that we have. But also there's people that come to America from different climates or different cultures, different systems that are at the top of their social ladder. So, or have a different view of life. They're willing to leave everything. It's kind of like the people that came to America originally. You had the people that had that were highly motivated, that wanted freedom, wanted to own land, and everything that came along with being an American. So they came here for that. And a lot of people come here for the same reasons today. So you end up with the people that have that propensity to be highly motivated, incentivized to come. So they do very well when they come to America. But one thing we haven't done well is to recognize that sometimes they come with the cultural differences.
Cultural difference.
And even though things may be legal, doesn't mean they're ethical.
I had a
that's the thing, and before we leave that, part of the mistake that we make is that we think, well, they just don't understand, and that's where they play the courts. They play the courts hard because the courts see these people who, you know, come in and just, well, we're just trying to get by. And it's like, no, you super aren't, because there are all these telltale signs.
Yeah. I think a lot of that is just the fact that we look at it and there's a major part of our thinking that says we need to do the right thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they know that. They don't look at that a lot of times. I had a vendor back in Wisconsin that sold forestry equipment in Russia. Mm. And I had gotten a call from a Russian, and they wanted to buy stuff direct from us. And I got a hold of him and said, hey, how's it work? And he said, the first thing you need to understand about dealing with the people in Russia is you get the money before you give them the goods. Yeah. Because if they get the product first and don't pay you, they don't look at that as an ethical issue. They look at that as, I'm a better business person than you.
Right.
I got your product and didn't have to pay for it. And they have no problem with that.
Right.
It's not I'm going to steal from you. It's, I'm a better business person. And I think a lot of that is the same with what you're talking about.
Right.
is we're gonna make some money here the way we make money.
And the reason I'm bringing it from the immigrant point of view is people coming here with different backgrounds and their philosophies of life and business is because we can recognize that here according to our own ethical conduct and standards, our own laws. So we recognize that here. But we have to do the same thing when we go abroad. It's like you said, you know, when you go to another country and you're conducting business, their framework can be much different from ours.
Sure.
And that's the case in Russia or in China or many other areas of the world. And we don't make that assumption. And sometimes we don't hold others to account the way that we should. And that's, I think, a lot of what's happening economically and why we're not doing or performing as well as we could as a country. We've lost our manufacturing base to China, to a country that essentially has no rights for their workers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
we continue to apply our own ethical standards.
Right. And so we're not looking at that. When you go down to Walmart, they've got the flags above the registers again, the American flags, and 80% of the content in the store is made in China.
Right.
And if it were up to me, I'd make a rule that you had to fly the flag of the country that had the most content in your store. And then people might recognize in Walmart and every other Costco or Target or wherever they went that where you live is based upon those flags eventually, if you're not going to change that.
Right.
And what kind of message do we send to the rest of the world when we're just printing money, getting back to that same issue, and handing it out to the rest of the world to countries that don't care enough about their own people to pay them fairly, to have proper retirement, health care benefits, overtime pay, workers' compensation, all the things we take for granted here as ethical and moral conduct that is correct, that they don't have there.
So, and I think we put ourselves in that box. I think when you walk into a Walmart and you see the American-made product is $5 and you can buy this Chinese-made product for $1.75, it's like, well, you know, it's the same thing. I'm going to buy the $1.75 product because I think we are kind of conditioning our own people to buy foreign.
We've done worse than that. And because of the prolonged abuse of the dollar here is the way I look at it. We've abused the dollar and have not been responsible enough in requiring enough out of our own people.
Mm-hmm.
We've got them to where they're hooked on it. And
right.
you can't expect a single mother of three to go down to Winco and pay 10 times the cost for her groceries. She can't do it.
She's not mulling over generous barbarism as a world economic issue.
So we've got ourselves hooked on currency in an economic environment to where it's really difficult to get out of it.
Sure.
And some of the things that are happening economically is China has an aging population because of their one-child policy, to where they've actually had a reduction in the population last year.
Oh wow!
China India has increased its population, so now they're right at the cusp, if not over China, in terms of their population. Because of that, they keep growing. We've got an aging population in China that is going to cause them to have a cliff that they're going to go off of. I think they've lost 50 million in their population that are work in the work environment.
Right.
So they've lost that many workers, 50 million.
But they have
last
so
years.
Many people. Does it really make a difference?
It does. It makes a huge difference because when they first started the one child policy, and everybody had one child, eventually it comes to generations to where you have a lot of elderly mm-hmm. and fewer workers.
Right.
So you have a hard time paying for all of the health and care that's required for an aged population, and not enough workers to pay for it.
Right.
And that's where they're going now. So now the answer to that for them is to find ways to offshore, outsource, or automate technology. And so that's one of the reasons they've had the policies that they've had with the Communist Party to try to bring in technology
to offset that
aging population. Okay. And they're supposed to lose between 2028 and 2050 11 million workers per year.
Oh, wow. So it's going to take a while for that curve to come back around.
Wow.
Well, when that happens, and because of the geopolitical environment we're in, the dollar is a big concern for us, because if we lose our hold over the reserve and trade currency of the world, you know, if we lost that, the game would be over. So we're trying to sustain that. As India becomes more populated, unfortunately, they don't have the same militaristic type structure as a communist country would have, because they're the largest democracy in the world. They have some difficulties of assuming some of the manufacturing responsibility, to where you'd see more products made in India instead of in China in the stores. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially where it will go, at least it's projected to go, is to shift a lot of that Chinese, because of the aging population and because of the geopolitical issues, the military concerns that we have with the South China Sea, and because of Russia, what's happening there in Ukraine. There's concerns that it'll shift companies to take their manufacturing out of China. In Zhengzhou, I lived there for a year. That's cell phone city. That's where iPhones are made, 70% of them. Cell phone city. And a lot of that will be shifted to India and other parts of the world, Vietnam, which is also communist. But they'll shift it out of China, which will change the dynamic there. So it's not all bad news, I guess, because there is that natural occurrence that's happening because they've made policies as a communist country that are going to be negative for them.
I would imagine that shifting demographic is also going to affect their military.
It will, and that's part of the concerns I have. Knowing, you know, my doctorate is in the Chinese currency, and I chose that many years ago, decades ago, because I anticipated that this would be the issue that would come up. If we can't sanction, meaning that if Germany does business with a country like Russia, to where we cut Germany off, which is essentially how the sanctions work, if you're doing, you have a choice: you do business with America or you do business with Russia. So if through the banking system, SWIFT and others, we're able to prevent commerce from occurring through sanctions, if we don't have the dollar as the reserve currency of the trade settlement, we don't have the ability to sanction.
Mm-hmm. Sure, because then nobody cares.
Yeah. And if China has the predominant reserve currency, which I don't know sane people that would put their money in their currency, but if they did, imagine what it would be like if you were Elon Musk and you had your yacht and it was taken by the Chinese government, or you were told you can't travel to certain locations or do business. You know what I'm saying? The sanctions would be on the other hand. That's a scary prospect when you have that kind of a legal environment
mm-hmm.
right. and a economic structure.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a winner-take-all
proposition. Yeah, so I don't know that
proposition.
In my view, that's what is happening. That's where we're at economically around the world right now, is that we've had the petrodollar ever since 1973. And after 9/11, 2001, 9/11, September 11th, we had 3 months there between that and December 11th, 2001. That's when China was allowed into the WTO, the World Trade Organization. And from that point, China took off with building. First, it was iron ore, and steel, and they quickly cornered the entire market. Had about 90% of the
that's when scrap steel hit the floor, and there was no value there anymore.
Mm-hmm. And then GE, their stock was at $600 billion back in when China joined the WTO. Today, it's worth less than $100 billion. So, $500 billion of market cap was eliminated as the jobs went from GE, the producer of everything from toasters to, you know, jet engines to China. And you look at all the X-ray machines and everything that are now made, Huawei and other Chinese companies. And that kind of tells you what has happened in terms of refocusing our economy. We started exporting jobs and pollution. And it started importing deflation, getting back to that 10-year treasury bond, how it's gone in a linear equation, kept going down, 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 down as we stimulate for a 40-year period. And it basically had nowhere to go. You know, it was near zero. Yeah. What do you do? Start requiring people to pay to keep their money in the bank?
Yeah.
I think we're getting there.
Yeah.
Because, what's the return? You know, savings account is...
Well, now it's gone up because of interest rates.
But remember, we were kids. Like, you went and checked your little passbook, and you had money in there. Yeah. Now it's like, not so much. Anyway, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Dan Sloan. And you are listening to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Headed. Okay, so go on with the quantitative options.
Well, you know, in recent history, you know, with going with what I was talking about with China and basically offshoring and bringing in deflation, which most people experienced in a higher standard of living over the last 20 years since, you know, 2001, China coming into the WTO and reducing the cost of everything. Our standard of living has increased. Our dollar was buying more as we bought things cheaper in relation to the real value. And that's how we kind of got in that situation we're talking about where people today can't afford to buy things that are made in America because the cost, if the true cost were built into it, would be too high.
Well, then borrowing money was cheap. I mean, you could... We're down to, I think, 0% interest on a lot of stuff.
What that does, and this is very complicated because there's a lot of parts to it. So just to simplify it, you know, when we have companies that are share economy type companies, where you have Grubhub and there's a lot of different delivery companies. Forget the other one that slipped my mind now. Grubhub and anyway, when you have Lyft and Uber. Uh-huh. And DoorDash. Okay. Yeah, DoorDash. You have all these companies that were created, and companies like them, WeWork, they were developed on that really low cost of capital. So think about this. If 30 years ago, you were going to go into business and you thought, well, where am I going to get the capital in order to create my company? I'm going to start something in the garage. I'm either going to take it out of my savings, borrow the money, put it on a credit card, borrow it from parents or family or however. There's a cost to that interest rate that you're going to have to pay. Mm-hmm. So you selectively did what you needed to do. Well, in the last 5 to 10 years, because of what had happened during the last economic collapse, global financial crisis, we had quantitative easing where there was a lot of money pumped into the economy. America was just printing money like crazy. The interest rates were reduced, stimulating the economy even further. Things kept going offshore and abroad. If you were going to start a business, a lot of people did. Entrepreneurship in America, that's what we're known for. If you could borrow somebody else's money instead of using your own and put that risk capital out there and not worry about, well, if we fail, we fail. It's not my money, right? Mm. And the cost of operating your business continues to decline because you're paying less and less interest over time. And that's what a lot of companies did. They'd borrow $1 billion, almost at zero. If they lost money, they'd borrow $2 billion, pay off the other $1 billion in bonds and start another one. Yeah. So their own capital became less at risk, and they just tried new things. And that's what I'm saying. When you can experiment, that's what Minsky was saying, and just make mistakes and not have to worry about the outcome, then there's a problem. Well, when COVID came up, in addition to having near zero and all these companies that were making, were starting businesses based upon growing, their growth rate was what people looked at. And that happened back in 1999 during the .com. Everybody was worried about how many clicks they were going to get and just expanding their business and crazy ideas that were done, and everybody funded them and it collapsed. We did the same thing in 2008, 2009, and now we're back at it again by developing companies that had no real value, and their business models are broken. Mm-hmm. They will not work. They've lost billions of dollars. Some of them are losing still. DoorDash and others are losing $1 billion a year. Or some of them are starting to get to where they're not losing as much.
But they're still losing.
How long
can you do that?
Yeah, and I gave a presentation through 9 U.S. embassies in the Middle East last year about this very thing. They wanted to know, how does it work? These are people that live under a fiefdom, a kingdom, and they're wondering how free enterprise works, how we can keep funding companies that have no business model that works now. They're losing billions of dollars, and they're staying in business. Well, that was before interest rates started to increase, and now that there's a cost of capital, mm-hmm. you can't just get by borrowing more money. You've got to actually pay people interest on what you're using their capital for.
Yeah, that's due.
Yeah, so you're seeing business failures because of that. In addition to that, because of inflation, our Federal Reserve has had to pull money, and other Federal Reserves have had to pull money out of the marketplace. So interest rate goes up, the cost goes up. Yeah, people recognize that when they go to buy a home and they can't afford a home because now the interest rate's double or triple what it was a year or two ago.
And that's where you get the quantitative tightening.
Well, in addition, the Federal Reserve has another tool that they use. And quantitative easing was something that was created in order to put money into the economy quickly and easily. Quantitative tightening is the reverse of that. Last year, it started in June. They started pulling out, I believe it was 47.5 billion dollars in June, July, and August. September, it went up to $95 billion a month. And what's happened is the Federal Reserve, their balance sheet went from about $4 billion, almost $5 trillion, to almost $10 trillion during the pandemic, and as they put money into the economy. So they're thinking, gosh, we've got this huge balance sheet. We need to reduce it so that when we need it, it's there, because we've done too much. Mm-hmm. Put too much money in, and we've all seen that through inflation. So the other way that they're doing it is to pull money out. And when they do that, about half of it comes from mortgages. So the way that works is they're not funding mortgages. About half of the $95 billion a month doesn't go to the banks. So your bank would normally have that money. They would go out and loan to somebody who's buying real estate, to buy a home, and they would take that paper, that contract that they had, and sell it to the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve would buy it, give them the money, and that would give them the money to go out and make more loans.
They can turn it around. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Turn it around. So that worked. And now that they're now that the Federal Reserve is pulling that money out, the money's not there. So in addition to having double or triple the interest rate on your home mortgage, you also have, if let's say 100 people could be funded before, maybe only half of them can now because the money's not there.
So you're not going to get new mortgages.
You might have a 7-8% mortgage, but the likelihood of finding somebody to loan you the money, mm-hmm. even if you could afford it at double or triple the interest rate from a year or two ago. So what that does is causes problems in the real estate market again. Commercial market is already hurting because of COVID. So you have the people that are working from home that have gotten used to working from home. And we all know what the labor environment is like. It's really hard to find people that that want to work in specific fields. And then trying to get them to come to work. You know, we see that on the news a lot with Facebook and Twitter and all the IT companies that are out there trying to force their employees to come back to the actual physical environment. Real estate market, the commercial market's hurting substantially.
Well, yeah, because you can't have empty office buildings.
And they've downsized.
Yeah, and because you've got all this stuff standing there not bringing in any income.
Yeah, and look at it all. Look at our towns. Mm-hmm. You drive around and you go,
But in addition to that, inflation is still an issue. So yeah. We've seen that just recently in the news where interest rates or inflation rates are continuing to be much stickier, much higher than our experts had anticipated they would be, which means that the Federal Reserve is going to have to both increase the rates in the future and for a more prolonged period. And that's the concern I have is we're pulling $95 billion a month out for QT, quantitative tightening. They've tried this before, you know,
is an effort to lower inflation?
It lowers inflation because what we're doing is we're restricting
the capital
that's available, yeah. Making it more expensive by raising interest rates and reducing by 95, but that's over $1.1 trillion a year that the Federal Reserve is taking out, so it's no longer there available.
Mm-hmm.
Does many things, just not just domestically, but also internationally. As I said earlier, we've artificially increased the standard of living for people around the world who are getting GNI, gross national income,
right.
Which is money that comes from expatriation, from capital that's coming from people that live here, that are sending money home, from the grants and other funding that they might receive. Well, if we're pulling that money out here, it's not going there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big concern for internationally, for countries like Ukraine or Russia or others, which in my view is where the problems are going to lie, not just domestically as we reduce that capital in order to reduce inflation. Is we're causing unintended consequences all around the world.
The old ripple effect.
The ripple effect. And it's bigger in other nations, just as what we're seeing in Russia. They want out of being sanctioned. You know, Putin wants to control what he's doing. He has oil in his under his ground, minerals that belong to their nation. And he's saying, if you're going to pay me, I want to be paid in my currency for my minerals. China's doing the same. If we're manufacturing everything, we want to be paid in our currency, not yours. And we don't want to be sanctioned. We don't want to be held hostage to whatever sociological or social issue happens to be on your mind today, whether it's transgender rights or other things. You know, we don't want to be sanctioned because we're not adhering to climate change rules and all these things. So getting back to what's happening here domestically is we're in February, which is traditionally the slowest month of the year in this county or in this area. Businesses are struggling. Money's being pulled out of the marketplace. And at the same time, we're hearing that interest rates are probably going to go up because of inflation. So that's a little concerning economically for me going forward.
Yeah, so, inflation hits everybody.
The last time they tried this, the Federal Reserve, with reducing the amount of their balance sheet through quantitative tightening was in 2019, September. I believe September 17th of 2000. My birthday is on September 18th. Sorry.
I was going to say, what are you, Rain Man 2?
Yeah, Rain Man 2. Yeah, so what happens, they tried to pull it out then. They were only pulling $50 billion a month and something called LIBOR. And overnight interest rates between banks broke. And they ended up pumping a couple hundred billion dollars back into the market in order to prevent it from collapsing, which most people are unaware in 2019 that almost happened. So the rates went from 2.5% overnight rate to up to almost 10% for banks. And that what that tells you is the banks were so afraid of what was happening economically that they wouldn't lend money to each other. That's pretty frightening. Overnight.
Yeah,
short-term duration, overnight loans. And it's because they were just pulling too much money out of the market. Well, what happens is if they reverse this, and I have a feeling that's what's going to end up happening, is we're going to get to a point to where the Federal Reserve is going to have to change course. They talk about that shift or tilt that's going to come along because you're going to collapse the economy. Hard landing is what they call it, if you're not careful. But when you pump money back into an economy that's already suffering from inflation, you get more inflation. So they kind of painted themselves into a corner in trying to walk that tightrope between stimulating too much or pulling too much out on the other side to where it's like oversteering a car. You know, when you're out there
snow and ice,
and you're fishtailing, right? You're trying to go one way, you go too far, you turn the wheel back the other way and go too far, and you're trying to even it out. It's kind of a precarious position that we're in. The other thing is about bringing manufacturing and jobs back to America, and that's one of the issues that we can talk about in terms of Redding and Shasta County, about what we can do here to bring viability and sustainability.
Right. See, people always want to do that. The trick is, as an investor, take our local area in Northern California. We have a ton of timber here. We have a lot of timber, and it's burning up every year. I mean, you'd have to be living in a cave not to know that. So instead of harvesting it and turning it into things, we're burning it up. But in order to take it and have it processed, it has to be profitable. Well, you can't take it for miles and miles and miles and miles. Sucks the profit out. So everybody's like, well, we just need more timber mills, you know, lumber mills and stuff. And it's like, well, at some point, who's going to invest in an industry that already was decimated? Probably not doing that. I don't know. When we come back, I'd like your thoughts on where we go with that and what you think might be a good idea and what might be a bad idea.
Okay.
You can be prognosticator, Dan, when we come back. How's that?
I like it. Yeah.
You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I can't do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone. We'll sing it. What if the armies of the Lord picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free, and not let Satan have one more? What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate, took a stand upon God's promise, and stormed hell's rusty gates? What if his people prayed, and those who bear his name would only seek his face? If we pray for those raised up to lead the way, then maybe kids in school could pray and unborn children see light of day. What if the light that we pursue came from a hunger for the truth? What if the family turned to Jesus, stopped asking Oprah what to do? What if his people prayed?
I thought that was fitting.
Very.
For an ode to Simpson University. Mm-hmm. There you go.
I like it.
Uh-huh. So What are the odds that we bring back manufacturing and that we do all those things here?
You know, it's something that I believed for a long time we need to really concentrate on. We are super efficient. I spoke about the countries around the world that have large populations that are agrarian. Laos being 80%, China probably in the area of 30 to 40%. In America, we got 0.7.
Yeah.
So we're extremely efficient in what we do. So through 3D printing technologies, new technologies, not necessarily only that, but many different ways that we can produce things in ways that I don't think the rest of the world can, using automation and robotics. It comes back to something that we need to concentrate more on, which is our educational system in creating the STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math environment that, you know, as being an educator and having been a business person myself in my past, the kinds of skill sets that are necessary today in today's work environment are completely different from what they were 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. A good example might be the weed water bottling plant. What is their name up there?
Crystal Geyser.
Crystal Geyser. So, my students in their last, the undergraduate students in their last semester take a course from me, and it's on business strategy and policy. And what we do is we go out actually to these companies, do a site visit, look at the financials and marketing and HR and everything, and we're just we're really blessed because, you know, they learn theory in the classroom and that's what they do most of their academic time that they're there,
but to go on the ground and look at the real thing,
it's a shocker, you know, on many of them. Yeah. And the local businesses are phenomenal in allowing us an opportunity. We try not to impose on them, you know, to say we are so blessed to have your participation. We don't want to ask questions you can't answer. So if we ask something that you can't answer, let us know and give us times when you're available. And we understand if things change because you're in business, that's your primary goal is to keep your people employed and keep profit coming in the door. But so the Crystal Geyser, we went up there and took a look at that. And people think, oh, water. And then, of course, water is a big issue, especially in the North State. People are worried about, you know, is Southern California going to get our water? And are we going to reserve it and store it?
And there's always a ton of controversy about that particular business.
Yeah, water rights and, you know, Coca-Cola was up there years ago and it left. And so we went up there and took a look at the plant. And we're not afraid to go to – right now we've had local brewery, Fall River. That's one of them they're reviewing now, and Reading a Rancheria is another one. Theory Coffee and Best Buy are participating with our students now.
Interesting. That's a pretty cool selection.
And what it does is gives us from a mom and pop or small company up to a very large, some of them are international. We've done Costco and just a whole slew of different companies over the years. But getting back to the water bottling plant is a good example of how technology has changed the way we do things. And when we went through there a couple years ago, they were producing 4 to 10 million bottles of water a day. Okay, that's 300 truckloads of water per day.
Wow.
And it's all robotics. So they've got 7 lines of robotics going, and it looks, you know, it's like something out of, you know, Star Wars Back to the Future or something,
All the crazy robot arms doing all the stuff.
Because you think water is extremely heavy. So you have pallets of water that are a couple thousand pounds per pallet, and they're producing, you know, 4 to 10 million bottles a day. And then all of the issues revolving around having people that know how to work with water rights, and dealing with the local politics up there. And a lot of the homes are vacation homes, so people live there and they have water rights. They're being sold for the water. And then you have the plastics, and people are against all the plastics. Even the number of trucks, 300 trucks a day, you can't just bring them all in at one time.
Right.
You have them lined up on the highway. Right. So it takes people with education and skill sets and that are far above and, logistics, yeah. supply chain.
Sure.
And then you have a plastics engineer that has to be able to mix the recycled plastics. Plastics used to go from Redding, from our or from Shasta County or Siskiyou County, down to L.A. and then back onto a container back to China. They would sort it there, turn it into pellets. They would send it back over and back into the factory here. Blow molders make all the water, water bottles. But now, because China stopped taking our plastics about 5 or 6 years ago, said, we're not your garbage, man. We don't want your plastics. It's cheaper just to make new ones than it is to recycle it. So then they started sending it to L.A. And did some work down there with putting it into pellets. And then it started coming back to the local businesses. They've created a fluid that takes the plastic off the label. The cap is a different plastic, and the bottles, so there's three different kinds of plastics. The bottle's a different kind of plastic. And separates it and then grinds it up and turns it into plastics that can be recycled right there at the plant.
Oh, wow.
Rather than sending it to China and back.
Mm.
So, and you have 100% recycled product in the bottle. The companies that would want, the people that would want recycling or a container that is the most sustainable to the environment is the water bottling company. Because then they can sell it as that. So to them, it's an economic value that they can use to encourage people to buy their product. So they're the ones who really want to have the most sustainable product in terms of plastics. And people sometimes get emotional about the fact that it's plastic. You know,
right.
Thinking about it's going to destroy the economy and destroy the environment and all those things. But when you look at it, you know, when I lived abroad, we were talking about 4.5%, 4.6% of the population being American. When I lived abroad, I always had to buy bottled water. In China, you can't drink from the tap.
Sure.
There's lead, chemicals, pesticides. You know, there's a high...
Really?
Yeah, high propensity of cancer because of all... You don't have any insects in your apartment. They're all dead from all the pesticides.
Oh.
Yeah, so, and you can't
well,
boil.
Well, that's an interesting benefit.
You can't boil this stuff out. So what happens, so you're asking me what the economy would look like here. Technology is really important because of the things I just spoke about. The example with the water bottling plant. I just took a tour of the Knopf manufacturing facility, 500,000 square
insulation,
feet.
Insulation.
Yeah, insulation. They use 700,000 bottles a day. In the manufacturing of their product,
water bottles.
Yeah, no, they're glass bottles.
Oh, so because
they make the beads,
fiberglass.
The little,
right.
little, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's
where
does
that come from?
I mean, from all over, from the recycling of glass bottles
of glass bottles,
and then they use corn syrup as the binder. They used to use formaldehyde, so it's a sustainable product.
Oh.
So those are the ideas that we need in order to bring manufacturing back and use. Technology and automation rather than labor like they're using in China in abusing their people. So we have the ability and the capacity to do that. When I graduated from Enterprise High School, probably 70% of the classmates I have moved away, went to college, did other things, and never came back. So we have a large number of people that are here, the young people, that end up leaving and never returning because the work
There's
environment...
There's no opportunity.
Because they need to be able to make a living. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just very frustrating that we haven't done enough here to both satisfy people that are concerned about our environment, which we should be. It's a beautiful, beautiful area to live. There's a lot of reasons people come here. But also to provide employment so that families can remain and continue their heritage here.
Right.
Well, same with all the places in our country. You look at that, there's a tremendous demographic shift.
Right.
And I think we saw that with the Industrial Revolution when kids left the farm and went into industry and moved into the cities. And
but we've spoken a lot about, you know, things that are overseas and you know, it's difficult because it's so complex and there's so much going on in the world geopolitically. But in order to bring that manufacturing back, we need to have educated people, and we haven't done enough to educate our youth well enough, in my view. I being involved in education around the world, I've seen what it's like. And in China, it's about taking classes in economics and finance and chemistry and biology. The math classes, they're amazing compared to what we've done here. I would not recommend that we do what China does. You know, they're going to school at 7 o'clock in the morning and getting done at 10 o'clock at night every day of the week. So from Monday through Friday, on Saturday, they go from 7 in the morning till 12 noon. And on Sunday from 6 at night until 10 o'clock. So they've got 30 hours a week off, and their parents will pick them up and take them to tutoring.
Mm.
Okay,
and in the off time?
It is in the off time. So it's brutal. And high incidence of suicide and those kinds of things. Because the competition is so high that they feel that they need to do that in order to get ahead. In America.
And do they stay there when they get that education, or do they move on?
A lot of them, they're gearing up to go abroad. So they want to come to the UK. Hong Kong, in the past, has had a really good educational system. Singapore, the United States, Canada, various places around the world. And they're beginning to learn English in the third grade. Okay, they know our culture. They know our music. They know our political system. We virtually know nothing about China,
right?
In America,
sure.
And that puts us at a disadvantage in many ways. But in order to change, like we were talking about the economics here, we need to look at ways to bring manufacturing back. We're starting to do that with computer chips and other things, but to bring the manufacturing back in sustainable ways. That meets the needs of all of our society.
Right. Well, a big hurdle we have is just the California. I mean, we don't encourage startups. We don't encourage technology. I mean, they're moving out faster than they're moving in.
But people have to want to move here.
Right.
You can't force them to move here. You can't get a grant and repaint downtown and go, okay, now everybody's going to come.
Right.
Is that going to be enough?
Yeah, but we've got parking meters.
Yeah. Well, that's where we're at right now. Right?
Yeah. So, we're going to attract them with parking.
But we have to have an environment that people want to move to.
Right.
And that's, you know, we have an incredible environment here, and stimulating it economically in ways that through STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, to provide that opportunity so that they can start businesses that are both environmentally friendly and economically sustainable is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you look at sometimes where our efforts are placed in the school environment, and what we're thinking is important, and it's like, okay, well, that's not going to get us where we need to go. What do you think about the fact that we kind of got rid of not everywhere, but in a lot of places, you know, wood shop, metal shop, that kind of stuff? That used to be a really good place for creativity.
Yeah.
You know, where you learned how things worked.
I bought my first car when I was 17, Enterprise High School, and rebuilt the motor in auto shop. So, yeah.
And the trades are dying right now. Kids aren't learning the trades anymore, which is going to hurt us.
Now, we had a plumber come out with his son.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, there you go. You know, his adult son.
Vocational training.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I guess we have to go.
Yeah, we're out of time.
Shoot, I didn't realize what time it was. Well, Dr. Dan Sloan, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's always interesting.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Blows by. So you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back like you know. We wish we could. For good.